In the fictional town of Middlemarch, ambition collides with social constraints in ways that feel startlingly modern despite the Victorian setting. This sprawling narrative weaves together the lives of idealistic characters whose grand aspirations face the stubborn realities of provincial life. What happens when our noblest intentions meet the messy complications of real communities? How do we find purpose when our grandest plans collapse? These questions pulse through every storyline, making this 150-year-old novel feel like it's speaking directly to our own struggles with purpose and meaning. Middlemarch shows us that the most profound heroism often exists not in dramatic gestures, but in the quiet, unrecognized acts of goodness that ripple outward in ways we may never fully comprehend. The novel's genius lies in revealing how our fates are shaped as much by the social web around us as by our own choices, a truth as relevant in our hyper-connected world as it was in Victorian England. Dorothea Brooke is a brilliant young woman yearning to improve the world while society expects her to be merely decorative. Unlike peers focused on fashion and social events, she designs cottages for laborers and dreams of meaningful contributions. Her religious fervor manifests practically, improving tenant conditions and implementing scientific farming on her uncle's estate. She sees Edward Casaubon, an aging scholar, as her path to intellectual fulfillment. Despite warnings, she views him as a great soul. Their Rome honeymoon brings disillusionment when she discovers his mind contains not large vistas and fresh air, but winding passages leading nowhere. His scholarly project proves hopelessly outdated, yet he demands her assistance even after death. Their marriage becomes a prison of mutual disappointment. Casaubon grows jealous, particularly of his cousin Will Ladislaw, while Dorothea withers under his cold precision. Her journey raises a question. Is meaningful action possible within society's confines, especially for women? Perhaps purpose lies not in grand gestures, but in smaller forms of goodness. Middlemarch functions almost as a character, a living organism with its intricate social ecosystem. The town maintains strict hierarchies, landed gentry at the top, professionals in the middle, and rising businessmen challenging traditional structures, with laborers occasionally revealing underlying class tensions. Gossip serves as both social glue and weapon, operating through drawing rooms and dinner parties. News travels rapidly, shaping reputations with devastating effect. The swift public condemnation of Bulstrode and Dr. Lydgate demonstrates how quickly opinion turns against those violating social norms. Religion and politics create significant divisions. Bulstrode leverages wealth and religious authority, while traditional Anglicans, like the Cadwaladers, represent the established church's ties to landed interests. Political allegiances split between conservative landowners and progressive reformers. These social forces profoundly shape individual destinies as characters pursue personal goals while finding their fates determined by community perception. As Eliot writes, "There is no creature whose inward being is so strong that it is not greatly determined by what lies outside it." Dr. Tertius Lydgate arrives in Middlemarch with revolutionary ambitions to transform medicine through scientific research. But his dreams quickly collapse against social politics and personal weaknesses. Lydgate's modern methods clash with established practices, creating jealousy among local doctors, while his association with Bulstrode damages his community standing. Despite intellectual brilliance, he lacks the social intelligence to navigate Middlemarch politics, his contempt for provincial pettiness preventing necessary alliances. Marriage to Rosamond Vincey proves fatal to his ambitions. Her expensive tastes trap him in mounting debt. When financial crisis hits, Rosamond refuses to adapt, forcing him to accept Bulstrode's money, a decision later appearing as complicity in wrongdoing. By the novel's end, this once idealistic reformer treats wealthy gout patients, the very practice he once despised, a cautionary tale of financial pressures eroding noble ambitions. Money flows through Middle March like blood, determining relationships, opportunities, and social standing. The novel tracks financial transactions from Fred's gambling debts to Lydgate's bankruptcy to Dorothea's inheritance, revealing characters' values with clarity. Marriage functions primarily as an economic institution. The Brooks sisters are introduced as heiresses with $700 a year each, their prospects enhanced by their uncle's estate. Casaubon's proposal includes settlement discussions, while Rosamond calculates Lydgate's connections to nobility as part of his appeal. Inheritance drives multiple plot lines, especially the drama around Peter Featherstone's will. Fred Vincey's development hinges on losing his expected inheritance and learning self-sufficiency, while Bulstrode's past involves diverting an inheritance from rightful heirs. Debt serves as both plot device and moral test. Fred's debt to Caleb Garth transforms him from idle gentleman to working land manager. Lydgate's debts reveal his naivety and Rosamond's inflexible social aspirations. Through these economic relationships, Eliot explores how money shapes character, testing principles and exposing weaknesses. As Fairbrother warns Lydgate, keep yourself independent of money complications. It's an ugly corner that you may get into. Nicholas Bulstrode embodies the novel's most intricate moral study, a devout evangelical banker whose religious piety masks hypocrisy. His past includes questionable pawnbroking, marrying his employer's widow while concealing information about her missing daughter, and appropriating the daughter's inheritance. When Raffles arrives with knowledge of these secrets, Bulstrode faces his reckoning with genuine terror. During Raffles' illness, Bulstrode's failure to properly relay Lydgate's instructions, allowing access to alcohol, creates ambiguity between passive allowing and active causing of harm. The town's judgment proves swift as associates distance themselves and demand his resignation. Yet Eliot refuses simple condemnation. Mrs. Bulstrode's decision to stand by her disgraced husband offers one of the novel's most touching displays of loyalty. Through Bulstrode, Eliot examines community moral judgment. The townspeople's righteous condemnation often conceals their own compromises while settling old scores. The narrator warns, "Even with a microscope directed on a water drop, we find ourselves making interpretations which turn out to be rather coarse." Middlemarch concludes by celebrating how unhistoric acts contribute to the growing good of the world. This vision of ordinary heroism permeates the novel. Dorothea's grand social reform ambitions transform into meaningful acts of kindness. Lydgate improves lives through medical care despite scientific failure. Fred and Mary find happiness through mutual growth rather than dramatic passion. Even Bulstrode finds redemption through his wife's forgiveness. Characters affect each other in subtle ways. Dorothea's loan saves Lydgate's reputation while helping reconcile him with Rosamond. Fairbrother's selfless advocacy for Fred exemplifies quiet heroism. Few achieve their initial ambitions. Lydgate abandons research, Dorothea never builds her model village, Will settles for conventional political success. Yet these apparent failures matter less than the connections they foster. As the narrator notes about Dorothea, her full nature spent itself in channels which had no great name on the earth, but the effect of her being on those around her was incalculably diffusive. In our achievement-obsessed culture, Middlemarch offers a radical alternative. Our greatest legacy may lie not in public recognition, but in how we improve the lives around us.